Well, good morning. Welcome, everybody, to week one as we kick off our brand new series called A Way Out. And we're going to be talking the next few weeks about the subject of temptation. And I'm hoping you're excited about being here. I think it's going to be a great series as we move through and learn some things about something that is common, not only to every one of us in the room, but it's pretty much like a common denominator of the human race, right? I mean, we all understand what temptation is, and we all face temptation. It doesn't matter what race you're a part of. It doesn't matter your nationality, your family of origin, your economic status. It doesn't matter if you're Christian or atheist or agnostic or some other religion. We all understand and face temptation. It is one of those things that binds us together as human beings. And so we're going to spend 4 weeks talking about this, and really, my hope and my prayer is that as we move through this and we get to the other side, that it really would be life-changing. And maybe for some, that means that you finally begin to find some freedom from some of the things that continue to trip you up over and over and over again. Maybe some things that you felt like have kind of captured you a little bit and you've not been able to get away from, that you'll find some freedom in those areas. For many of it may just be that we understand better what's at stake by giving in to temptation. And so it's kind of a catalyst to help us to resist temptation along the way. But here's what I know from working with people for over 30 years now, is that we have a tendency to say yes to way too many wrong things and to not say yes to way too many right things. I mean, we just have a tendency to do those things. And over time, our choices tend to lead us down roads where we reach a place where we feel kind of stuck or trapped, like there's no escape, there's really no way out. And what we'll discover, and the reason we even entitled the series this, is that God is faithful. And no matter where you are, no matter what the temptation is, no matter how far you've gone down that road, there's always a means of escape. God always provides a way out. And we'll discover that as we begin to learn a little bit more about temptation. So as we kick off and get ready for this series, I want you to turn to someone and tell them your greatest temptation. I'm just kidding. I'm not going to do that to you. I want to give you a definition of temptation, and we'll work off of this definition each week. And by the way, each week is going to build off of the previous weeks, okay? So if you can't be here one of the weeks of this series, well, good luck dealing with temptation. That's all I got for you. No, if you can't be here, you can always go to our website and find the messages from Sunday. The video messages are at thebridge.me/messages. And you can see the video there, or if you want to listen to it on the go, a podcast, go to your favorite podcast app, look up The Bridge, and you can listen to us on the go. But stay up with it, and hopefully we'll learn some things over the next 4 weeks about temptation. Here's the definition that we're going to work with. Temptation is any effort to satisfy a need or desire apart from God. Any effort on our part to satisfy a need or desire apart from God. Now, the reason this is so important is because oftentimes we think about temptation, we think about like a thing or a person or a vice, you know, and we categorize our temptations based on these little things in our life or whatever, but we never really stop and think, what's behind that? I mean, temptation, is it really just, you know, drugs or alcohol or porn or overeating or him or her? I mean, or is there more to it? And I think sometimes we fail to see that there are things that drive the temptations that we face in life and make some of them stronger than others. And what we begin to understand is that we have legitimate, real needs, desires, oftentimes God-given needs and desires. And if you think about some of the biggest temptations you faced and maybe times that you've succumbed to the temptation and you feel like, man, I failed in that moment or whatever. If you really stop and look behind that temptation, you will likely discover that there was a need or a desire there. And the problem came in when you tried to satisfy that need or desire outside of what God desired for your life or God's plan was for your life. For instance, there are times, and I'll ask you this question, are there legitimate needs in your life where you are tempted to meet them in illegitimate or irresponsible ways? See, we all have the need for companionship, intimacy. These are needs that God has planted within us, within our heart, desires. The need for financial gain, progress in our life. Those are desires that I feel like are God-given kind of desires. And there's a way to meet those inside of what God's plan is for our life, but oftentimes we might reach outside of God's plan and try to meet those in ways that are irresponsible or illegitimate. So are there legitimate needs that you have that you're tempted to meet in illegitimate or irresponsible ways? Are there areas of your life where you're tempted to presume upon God and maybe try to manipulate God in some way? You know, I mean, because, let's face it, God's a big God. He's running the universe, right? So he's got a lot of balls in the air. He's got a lot going on all the time. I'm going to just go ahead and take care of this part myself. God, you got a lot going on. I'll take care of this. We start putting our plans together. We start putting our plans into action. And maybe we tie a little bow on top of it with a little prayer that we whisper, you know, God, can you bless my plans? Okay, we're good, right? And we look at God and say, you know, God, if I read this verse and I say this and I pray a certain way, then you're kind of bound to bless me on this one. So, you know, and we try to manipulate. Are there areas where you're presuming upon God or trying to manipulate God as opposed to cooperate with God? See, those are needs and desires that drive many of those things. Are there areas where you're tempted to maybe cut a few corners? Or maybe you're tempted to sacrifice what's important for what's immediate? You know, you're trying to get the deal done. And so I'll set aside my morals or I'll set aside my values for just a moment till we get this thing done, and then I'll pick them back up on the other side. And so we're tempted to sacrifice the things that we say are important to us for what's immediate. See, these are desires. These are needs, oftentimes God-given, that we seek to satisfy in ways that are outside of God's plan for our lives, God's desire for our life. So that's temptation, and we all face that. But what we'll begin to discover, and this is kind of the bottom line of the entire series, is this. Every temptation is an invitation. Every temptation that you face, every temptation that I face, is an invitation. We often look at temptation in the negative viewpoint. You know, temptation is bad, temptation is evil, temptation is this, whatever. But there's a positive side that every time we face temptation, there's an invitation for us to trust God more. There's an invitation for us to lean into God more, for us to depend more on His ability to supply our needs than our own. There's an invitation for us to continue to submit our desires and needs under His authority and not place them on top of what He says. There's an invitation for our faith to grow, for our life to expand. Every time we face a temptation, there's an invitation. There's an invitation for our lives and our faith to grow. And so as we move through this series, I want you to understand that the temptations that you face, their needs, their desires that are legitimate for the most part, that we tend to seek outside of God's will to try to meet, but there's always the invitation for you to grow and for you to learn more about who God is and what He desires for your life. Now today, in kind of a way of getting us started, I'm going to give you four truths about temptation. It's just foundational truths about temptation, and we'll build off of those over the next few weeks. And I'm going to talk to you through a passage that's our base passage for the entire series, which we'll also build off of in the weeks as well. And that passage is in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Now, the book of Corinthians, the Apostle Paul writes two different letters to a group of Christ followers in the ancient city of Corinth. And Corinth, and you have to understand a little bit about Corinth to understand what these people were dealing with. Corinth was a place, it was a seaport city that basically was a huge trade route that connected two huge bodies of water. And so people were constantly coming and going through this city, many times staying overnight, maybe a couple of nights. And so picture this, you've got this place where there was a lot of bad stuff going on. There was a lot of temptation there. In fact, the city of Corinth, they had there in the city, the temple to Aphrodite, which was the Greek goddess of love. And employed there in the temple at any given time were close to 1,000 prostitutes that were a part of temple worship for Aphrodite. And so there are many temptations related to that. So you're living in this place where there are temptations everywhere. People are coming and going. They find themselves far away from home, far away from people that know them, far away from accountability. And they're in a place where temptation is there all around them. It's kind of like the Las Vegas of the ancient Roman world. You know, when in Corinth, you know, act like a Corinthian. And what happens in Corinthians or in Corinth stays in Corinth, right? So they just was coming, they were coming and going, and man, they were doing all kinds of things. In the middle of all of this was a group of Christ followers. And Paul writes to them. He's dealing with all kinds of different issues, but he deals with this mindset because they were facing these temptations, and they had a tendency to want to try to rationalize. Like, what do you expect? We live in Corinth. I mean, we're faced with it all the time. Okay, we give into it. What do you expect us to do? And so Paul's addressing this mindset. And in 1 Corinthians, he begins dealing with this in chapter 10. And what he's done here, he begins setting up this passage that we're going to look at. And he's telling them, listen, before you guys, there were other disciples. Before you first century disciples, there were other people that were living by faith. But occasionally, they would do this. And God would say, that was evil. And then Paul would say, so don't do that. And then he would set something else up and say, they would do this, and that was evil, so don't do that either. And then he would set something up, and don't do that either. And then he gets to our passage in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, starting in verse 12. Here's what he says. He says, even if you think you can stand up to temptation, be careful not to fall. He said, all right, I've been telling you about these people, and they would do these things, and God said it was evil, and I'm telling you not to do it. And then I told you about another scenario. I told you not to do that. I told you not to do this. And now even if you think you can stand up to this temptation, you better be careful. Because the moment you start thinking you can do that, you're going to fall. And so the very first truth that we see here about temptation is this. No one is above temptation. No one. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter if you've been a Christ follower for 100 years, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how mature you think you are. No one is above temptation. You're not, I'm not. And that's what Paul is saying. He's like, listen, if you think you're at a place where you're above it, because periodically, you know, you can sit back and go, well, that's not for me. I don't deal with that. I don't have to worry about that. And maybe you're even here today thinking, you know, this would be a good message for so-and-so. They need to be here. They need to listen to that message. That's not for me. I don't struggle there. I don't have to worry about this. Paul says, the moment you reach that place, you've set yourself up. Because we have a spiritual enemy that we call Satan. And there are attacks on us, temptations put in front of us constantly. And a lot of times we associate those temptations with areas of weakness. But do you understand that our enemy at times will tempt us in an area that we consider a strength? We consider something that we don't have a struggle with, we don't have a problem with. And that may be the very area that we get tempted and actually fall. And when we fall in those areas, it seems to be so much worse and harder because we've set ourselves up to say, I don't struggle there. I don't have a problem here. And here's where the problem comes in. The reason we feel strong in this area it's because God has helped us in that area and we just don't, you know, God has worked in our lives there and our confidence in who God is and what he's been able to do for us has kept us from falling into that temptation. And subtly over time, we begin making a little bit of a shift away from confidence in God to confidence in me. To the point where it's not God that's protecting me and keeping me or helping me to say no to the temptation. Now it's me. Look at what I've been able to do. Look at how strong I am. This is not a problem for me. Problem for you, not a problem for me. I'm strong in this area. And there's a difference between being self-confident and being confident in self. It's very subtle, but the impact is huge. See, you can be self-confident. That means that you're confident in who God has created you to be. You're confident in the things that God is doing in your life. You're confident in the way that God has grown you. And how he wants you to live your life. You're confident in those things, and so it affects how you live your life. That's different than being confident in self. Confident in self says, I got myself here. I did this. I won't do that. I'll never be a part of that. It's all about me. There's a huge difference there. And when we get to that place, we've just set ourselves up. And we've set ourselves up to fall really, really hard. No one is above temptation. And if you think about the temptations that you faced, oftentimes there are emotions that go with those temptations. Our emotions, man, they can play right in to our temptation and lead us down a road if we're not careful. And there are four primary emotions that I'll tell you about that you've got to always be on guard against. And they're going to come up and they're going to be in the shape of a stop sign. And when these come up, you need to say halt. All right? And here are these emotions. When you're hungry, that could be physically hungry, low blood sugar, you need something to eat, or it could be that you're driven, you're hungry for more. You want to see more out of life. When you're hungry, that could be a time where you allow yourself to get drawn into an area of life or a temptation that you did not want to be a part of. When you're hungry, when you're angry, and it's not just being upset about something. There are some things in life we should be angry about. I'm not talking about that kind of anger. We're talking about going from one season of your life to the next, carrying anger, harboring anger, bitterness. Maybe someone hurt you, did something to you, and you're carrying this with you. If you're carrying with you a season of anger from one season to the next, you're setting yourself up to fall. Anger. L is lonely. When you're lonely, we all have a need for companionship. We all have a need for intimacy. When you're feeling lonely, those may be times when you need to be on guard against temptations that may come your way. And then T is tired. When we're tired, when we're worn out physically, mentally, emotionally, exhausted, we open ourselves up. We become very vulnerable to temptation. So being aware of those things, being aware of how you're feeling in the moment, being aware of the emotions, because those emotions can set you up for temptation to be more vulnerable in those moments of temptation. So you need to halt. You need to stand back and say, okay, where am I? What am I feeling? Let me at least be aware so that I can have a better chance against the temptations that I will face. No one is above temptation. Paul goes on, he continues in that passage, and he says in verse 13, no temptation has overtaken you except what is common to mankind. There's no temptation that you'll ever face that someone else hasn't faced already. Which points out the second truth about temptation, and that's this. There are no new temptations. Zero. No new temptation. Now, they may flesh themselves out in a new kind of way, but there are no new temptations. But we tend to think that sometimes. We tend to think that our situation is unique. Our situation is different. In fact, we tend to think if you had to live in this situation, you would be tempted the same way. But you don't understand. My temptation, what I'm facing, what I'm going through, it's just different. But it's really not. I know we believe that sometimes, but it's really not. See, there are other people that have marriage problems that are trying to work through their marriage issues. There are other people that deal with addictions and hang-ups and hurts. But they're actively working through those and trying to deal with those. There are other people that deal with sexual sin and deal with sexual temptation. But they're working through those things and they're dealing with those things. You say, well, but you don't understand what I grew up in. I grew up, man, my dad was never there. My mom, she had issues and substance issues. And I had horrible extended family. I mean, they did things that are unspeakable. They're horrible people. You just don't understand. Well, no, right. But there are other people that have grown up that way as well. And they don't allow the actions that were taken by people in their life to dictate the actions that they take today. It's not easy necessarily, but they work through those things. There's no new temptation. They've all been present before, and other people have dealt with them, and some have been very successful in dealing with them, some maybe not as successful. But they're there. We can learn from that. And we can understand, I'm not in this alone. I'm not the only one that's ever dealt with this. There's no, every temptation is a temptation that's common to mankind. And just because you're tempted doesn't mean that you've sinned. And that is so important for you to understand. Again, we have a spiritual enemy. Again, we call Satan. And one of the ploys that Satan has is to convince us that if we've been tempted, then we've sinned. Why? Why would that be a ploy? Why would that be important? Because most of the time, if we feel like we've messed up or we've sinned or we've done something wrong, what's associated with that is guilt. And how do we medicate our guilt? By doing something wrong, right? I mean, we do. It's like we start feeling guilty, and it's like, well, I've already done this. I might as well go further. And we just medicate by doing more dumb things. We giving in to more temptation. And he knows that. And so if he can convince you that just because you've been tempted, you've actually sinned and you can apply guilt, man, it's just a cycle that's going on there that just takes you straight downhill. But here's what the book of Hebrews says about Jesus. Hebrews chapter 4, verse 15 says this: Jesus understands every weakness of ours because he was tempted in every way that we are. He faced temptation in every way that we face temptation, but he did not sin. So there's a difference between being tempted and sin. Now, one leads to the other, but they're not necessarily equal. Let's just say, for example, you've decided you want to start eating healthier. And you've decided that for you, donuts is off limit. It would be a sin for you to eat donuts. Now, is it a sin to eat donuts? No, not for me, maybe for you. But it would be a sin for you to eat a donut, okay? You've already decided that. And then you show up tomorrow at the office. Somebody was so nice, and they brought donuts. And they're chocolate glazed. And you're walking by the workroom, and they're calling out to you, "I'm in here. I got chocolate. I know you want me. You know you want me." You know, it's all that kind of stuff, right? And you're going, and you're getting locked in. You're like, donut trash, donut. And all of a sudden, you break out of it, and the song stops. And you go on to your office. Did you sin? No, you were tempted. For a while, you'd gotten locked in on the donut trance, but you broke out of it. You were tempted, but you didn't sin. He said, "Well, what if I picked it up and smelled it?" Well, I mean, I don't know. You're getting technical on me, okay? If I licked the icing, well, you probably did at that point. All right. But the point is, you can be tempted and still not sin. There's a difference. Ladies, let's say you're driving down the road and there's a guy jogging with his shirt off. Or guys, you're driving and there's Miss Go-Go Pants jogging along or something. Out of the goodness of your heart, trying to be a good citizen, you decide, "I just need to circle back, make sure they can get through that crossing up here safely." Did you sin? Well, you're probably pretty close at that point. Right? But there's a difference. You can see an attractive person, acknowledge the fact that they're attractive, keep rolling, and you haven't sinned. You haven't, you know, you've been tempted to lust or whatever, but you didn't sin. There's a difference. You circle back and all bets are off, okay? But there's a difference. There's a difference between being tempted and actually sinning. None of us are above temptation. But we don't have to necessarily give in to temptation as well. Okay? And there are no new temptations that ever face anybody. The third truth about temptation is that God will never tempt you. God will never, ever tempt you. Now, maybe occasionally we say things like, "God is the one who tempted me." We probably are a little more crafty than that, though. And so maybe we don't say, "God tempted me," but we say, "Well, he didn't remove the temptation." I mean, that would be a help, wouldn't it? I mean, periodically, I mean, he knows Go-Go Pants is going to be dry. Why can't she stay at home today? You know what I mean? He could remove the temptation, but he didn't. And I think a lot of times we look for somebody to blame. God is an easy target, I think, sometimes. But here's what Paul said as he continues on in the verse. He said, God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. That he's not the one tempting you. In fact, he'll bring the temptation to a close at some point so that you are not tempted beyond what you can stand up against, what you can endure, what you can bear. See, God doesn't tempt us. Now, periodically, here's a truth that you can know. God will test you. He will not tempt you. You say, why won't God remove the temptation? Well, it's not typically his MO to take those things out of the way. He might occasionally. He didn't put them there. But it's not necessarily his MO to take them away. And it may be that in that temptation, there's a test. And you're like, but why? Why would he do that? Well, think of it this way. When you're in school, why do you take tests? You're like, yeah, I wondered that myself. Why do we take that? It's rhetorical, really. But think about it. You take tests to see how far you've come, how much you've learned, and you take tests to see whether you can be promoted to the next grade. You have to pass certain tests to be able to get to go further. That makes sense. In the workplace, there's a lot of that as well, where you might be tested to see how much you've grown, how much you know of what you do, to see if you're capable of taking on more responsibility, maybe a higher paying job. And so you get to move forward. It's a way to prove yourself. It's a way to move you forward in life or in your career or whatever the case may be. So in the same way, in the very same way, God tests you to move you forward. The difference being with Satan tempts you to move you backwards. The difference there is in the motivation. See, God may not remove the temptation. He might leave the temptation. He didn't put it there. But the reason he would leave the temptation is not to hurt you. The reason he would leave the temptation is to test you so that you could move forward. Now, Satan would put the temptation there to try to keep you down and to back you up. A moment ago, I said, every temptation is an invitation. If God allows that to remain, it's an invitation for you to see, how far have I come in this area? Am I willing to submit my needs and desires to his authority? Am I willing to say that God can supply all of my needs? I don't have to try to supply this need in a way that's outside of his plan. How far have you come? God is trying to move you forward in your faith. He's trying to grow your faith. Now, James, the brother of Jesus, and he writes the book of James, and he actually gives us a little bit clearer insight into this thing about God not tempting you and actually where these temptations come from. And here's what he says in James chapter 1, verses 13 through 15. He says, and remember, when you are being tempted, do not say, God is tempting me. God is never tempted to do wrong, and he never tempts anyone else. So it's not God. He's not tempted. He never tempts anyone. Temptation, where does it come from? It comes from our own desires, our needs, our desires. We've said before, our appetites, that we have appetites. And as you feed an appetite, it just grows and demands more from you. So it comes from our needs, our desires, which entice us and drag us away. These desires give birth to sinful actions. And when sin is allowed to grow, it gives birth to death. He says these desires, these things that are part of our life, they entice us. And that word entice, it's actually a fishing word. And it's like, and Satan does this some. Sometimes it's our own desires. But it's like, by the way, if you care, this is an Alabama fishing rod and reel. I didn't get any whoops from that, I guess. That's bad. I'm sorry. So what, you know, maybe Satan does this. Maybe it's our own desires or whatever. But it comes along. And he's like, yeah, here's the one. I got a little pink tail. Look at me. I know you want it. You want to nibble. You want just a little nibble. You don't have to have the whole thing. Just take a little taste. I know you do. I know you want it. And we finally go, you know, I do. I really do. I don't have to have the whole thing. I just want a nibble. And as soon as we get a nibble, guess what happens? The hook gets set, doesn't it? And if you've been fishing and you set that hook, What you've done is you've put a bait on there and you've lured this fish out from the safety that it felt. It comes out, it takes a nibble, you set the hook, and it feels dragged away, doesn't it? Dragged right out into the boat. And what happens to a fish when it sits out in the boat? That's not rhetorical. You can answer that. It dies. Yes, death is certain. It's coming. And we've talked about it. Every time sin is present, death is right there. Maybe it's the death of a reputation. Maybe it's the death of a relationship. Maybe it's the death of a marriage or a family. But when sin is present, death is right there with it. Now, let's just say that you're looking at this and maybe you've bitten this little pink tail before and you're like, wait. No. I know this. There's a hook. He ain't getting me again. I know better. So what does Satan do at that point? He's like, well, all right, pack it up. We can't get him, so let's go on. Is that what he does? No. He said, all right, well, you don't like the pink tail. Let's go over here and see what else we got. So he said, we'll take that off. How about this one? You might like the green ones better. So he puts a little something else on there for us. A little $100 bill. That's real too, and that's probably illegal that I just punched a hole in it. But he says, look, I know you want that. I say, you tempted right there, aren't you? Yeah, I know you are. He's like on the edge of his seat. Says, you need this. You need this in life. You need this to make something of yourself. Just follow me. Just come after it. No big deal. And as soon as we get it, he hooks us. And a lot of times it's our own desires that entice us away. Now, it's true, right? If all we had to do was fight one temptation at a time, we probably wouldn't fall as often, right? I mean, if it was just, okay, today is going to be the green temptation. I better fight it. Tomorrow I'll be pinktail, you know, whatever. If that was the case, it'd be a little bit easier. But that's not the case, is it? It's not the case in the U.S. It's definitely not the case in Sugarland, Texas, where we live, right? No. We're not fighting them one thing at a time. No, for us, our lives, if I can get it out, our lives look more like this, right? We're walking around constantly with these things in our face. And it's like, everywhere we look, you know, we got Barbie, we got all kind of stuff happening in front of us, right? How do you fight against this? It's there constantly. And it's the things that matter to you the most. It's the needs that you have that are dragging you away and enticing you. And you can't look any direction without seeing some temptation in front of you. How do you fight against that constantly? You're wondering if I'm going to keep this on the rest of the talk, aren't you? I'm not. But that's what our lives look like. And it's really, really difficult. But what you have to understand is that God is not the one tempting you. That oftentimes it's our own desires that are dragging us away, enticing us and dragging us away. But those temptations can be an invitation to trust God more and to lean more into Him and to grow in your faith. And the last truth is this. God always provides a way out. Every time temptation is there, doesn't matter what the temptation is, doesn't matter how far it's taking you, there's always a means of escape. And sometimes it doesn't feel that way. Sometimes it feels like it's got us so trapped that we can't get out. But God is faithful. There's always a means of escape. Here's how Paul wraps up the verse, verse 13. But when you are tempted, He, God, will always provide a way out so that you can endure it. There's always a way out. For us to, especially as Christ followers, for us to stand back and say, there was nothing I could do. I mean, I had to say yes. I couldn't resist. The temptation was too strong. There was no way of escaping that temptation. It was going to happen. Well, we really can't say that. Because the scripture is really clear that God's Spirit comes to live within us as Christ followers. We have the Spirit of God living in us that gives us the power to say no to temptation and to sin. And that God is faithful to provide a way out, a means of escape. Now, for me, the problem for me is that I'm not typically looking for the means of escape. I'm looking for a means to rationalize the decision I'm about to make. I'm looking for a way to justify things. But God says, if you just take a moment and look, there's a way out. You know, you could always walk away. You could always bite your tongue. You could always call someone. You could always choose not to go there. You could always not pick up that phone call. You could always not stop by her cubicle. You could always drive a different direction to work. You could always put together a thought and a plan about your emotions and how to deal with them when they come along so that they don't just drag you along wherever they want to take you. See, there's a means of escape that God has given you a way out if you will take the moment to look for it. But in that moment, it's really difficult. In that moment when temptation is coming on full, you know, and it's just right there in your face, it's so difficult to look for the way out, especially if like that hat on and they're all around you. It's like, I can't see a way out anywhere. So you have to plan for it. What is the way out that God would provide for you? What is it? Well, I don't know. I've never thought through it. Well, you know, here's the saying, the old saying that you probably heard before. If you fail to plan, you plan to fail. So why not try to put together a plan? Most of us know the biggest temptations we face in life. Most of us know where those are, what those are, when they come. A lot of times we know what desires and needs are behind those. We know what emotions we're feeling during those times. So why not put together a plan related to those things? Why not prepare for them? Why don't you invite someone else into your life? Open up to them about the temptations you face. I don't want to be vulnerable. I don't want to open up. I don't want to share with anybody what I'm going through. Because they're going to think bad of you, right? As if they don't have temptations that they're facing. See, as long as our temptations stay in the dark, they continue to have a level of power that's really not true, but they feel like they do. And when we expose them to light, man, the power that they have begins to diminish a little bit. And that's part of why you want to have somebody that you trust in your life that you can talk about those things. Why not invite accountability into your life? People that you trust, that you know, are going to ask you, how are things going in this area of your life? There's something about knowing that I've got to answer a question related to this area that kind of is a good catalyst for not wanting to do it. You know what I'm saying? Why not invite accountability? You know, we talk about small groups a lot around here, and small groups are a great place to be vulnerable, to talk about what's going on in your life. It's a great place for people to pray for you and encourage you. It's a great place for accountability. And I just, listen, small group is not a therapy session every week. But we've talked about it here before that when you come into a room like this and we're all sitting in rows, that the rows don't know. The rows don't know what you're going through. The rows don't know the deals that you're experiencing, the temptations that you're facing. The rows don't know. Now, again, we could have everybody come up here individually and talk about your own temptations, but I doubt that's going to go very well. So since the rows don't know, you need to have a community of people that do know. That's the beauty of small group. You go from these rows to sitting around in circles, and you're looking at people face to face, and you can open up and share your life. You've got to invite that into your life. Maybe you need something more than just a community around you that you can be vulnerable. But maybe you need to go and talk with someone professionally. Listen, I am so in favor of talking to counselors. I have. Probably all of our staff has. And there's something, there's a beauty about someone who's professionally able to help you, to walk through, ask you questions, get to deeper levels of what you're going through than you can do yourself. Man, if you need to talk to someone and you don't know, ask us. We can recommend people that you can see. It's so important. And maybe you need to go further than that. Maybe you need a place to rehab. Maybe you need to detox. Maybe you need to work through some deeper issues where you need time away to do that. And that's scary to think about. The last thing we want to think about is going away and, you know, doing all that and what are people going to think and all that kind of stuff. It's scary to think about until you think about where your life is headed if you don't. See, to me, that's scarier. Some of you know this. I've shared it before. When I was 13, I was in a car accident that just kind of busted me up a good bit. And the doctor said back then, you know, you're going to have early arthritis, which I was a 13-year-old kid. I don't even know what that means. About the age of 35, I began to understand. And so from about the age of 35, it led to about 10 years of surgeries with hip replacements, both hips being replaced, a back fusion, all to try to address issues that happened as a kid. Well, that equaled to about 10 years of steady dosage of pain medication. I lived on it. I was probably only off of pain medication 2 months out of 10 years. With steady dosages of pain medication, is an increase in tolerance, increase in medication, to the point where it was in control of me. I couldn't control it. Someone said, you need to go get help. I said, do you know what I do for a living? I'm a pastor of a church. People will look at me and say, how could the pastor of our church be on prescription drugs? How come Jesus wasn't enough for him? We can't listen to him. We can't follow him. How could that happen? I said, do you know what I do for a living? She said, I'm your wife. I do know what you do for a living. So I did. I checked myself in. And this has been a few years back. It's in 2012. I checked myself in and spent 21 days in a place trying to get off of pain medication and finding out some different, what drives some of those needs and desires. And today I stand here with no pain medication, which is an awesome thing for me. I never thought in a million years, I never thought that I would ever be away from it. I never thought I could live life without it. And that's kind of what had happened, you know. I mean, it convinces you that you have to have that. And so, and then I remember the first time I ever shared that. I was scared to death. I didn't want to share it with anybody. I was glad I got the help. I didn't want anybody to know. And so then there was fear that kind of kept me locked up for a while. When we talk about no perfect people allowed at the Bridge, you have to understand how important that is to me, right? There's no perfect pastors around either. If you need the help, let us know. I'd love for you to get the help, because it's scarier to live and continue to go down that road than it is to get the help you need. Temptation is just simply trying to meet needs and desires, trying to get satisfaction for those outside of what God desires for you. But every time it's present, it's an invitation for you to push in to God, for you to learn more about who He is, for you to learn more about His grace, His mercy, His forgiveness, and His ability to supply everything you need in life. It's an invitation. And the last thing I'll say is this, that Christ in you is stronger than any wrong desire in you. That if you know Christ as your Savior, You have something in you that gives you the strongest possible foundation to fight against temptation and to withstand the pressure that it brings. If you don't know Christ, if you've never given your life to Jesus, my hope and prayer is that you would, because I want you to be able to fight this thing. I want you to find yourself in a place of being victorious over the things that have limited you and kept you down. And Christ in you is stronger. And if you're a Christ follower, you have a resource in you and the person of Christ that you can tap into and lean into. And you'll discover more about who you are and more about what He can provide for you than you've ever known before. And this is your invitation to begin learning that. Let me pray for us, okay? Father, thank you for your grace and your mercy and for all the ways that you supply what we need in life. God, there are times that you're supplying what we need and we don't even know that you're doing it. You're always working. You're never still. You're constantly bringing things together, even the worst moments of life, for our good if we just trust you and lean into you. And I pray for anyone who's here this morning that has never opened up their heart to your Son, that even right now in this moment, they would simply say, Jesus, I need you. I need you to be my Savior. I'm sorry for the things that I've done. I don't want to do those any longer, and I need your strength in my life to help me walk away from these things and to not continue to be tripped up over and over and over again. God, I pray that for anyone that just simply just prayed some prayer of faith, just saying, Jesus, I need you as my Savior, I pray that in this moment it would be so real that in this moment they would know beyond any doubt that your Spirit has moved within their life, that there is a new strength, there is a new resource, there is a new way to live. And I pray that you would begin right now in this moment providing everything they need to face whatever it is they're going to face when they leave this building today. Help us to see these temptations as an invitation. And God, I pray that we see you move in our hearts and in our lives as we press into you. Thank you for loving us. Thank you for taking care of us. And we pray this in Jesus' name.